Good afternoon. And good afternoon to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Today I will not be reading out of the first or second editions of the course, but will continue to read from the transcript of what I shared with Helen and Bill, which Bill typed up. I encourage you to read along, and again, don't get hung up on the differences that you see. The chapter we're on, the section we're on, is called Right Teaching and Right Learning. It helps, in order to understand right teaching, to know what wrong teaching is. And so let's consider this. When the point came where each of you decided, Father, I'd rather see it my way. I'd rather define everything myself. I'd like to play with the experience of being an authorizer myself, all by myself. At that moment, as I've said before, the first thing you noticed was that you were, for lack of better words, small, tiny. I even used the word pissant mortal, and that's not poisson, that's pissant. Not a water ant, not a sugar ant, not a red ant, but a piss ant. A piss ant, nothing. That was the first thing you noticed, was that your bigness, your universality, your infiniteness was missing. And what was the first thing you felt? Uneasy, because it was unnatural to the Divine One that you were. And a more accurate word for uneasy was the word fear. You felt small, in other words, incomplete, and it was a fearful experience. What necessarily followed was that the only thing available for you to teach was fear, because fear was expressed in every single thought and utterance you had or made. What you necessarily had to teach everyone else was, quote, make me whole, unquote. Because being the Divine One that you are, and not being able to abandon your capital S self completely, you knew that was your birthright and therefore your fundamental need. And so it became your task to create equity, if you will. And equity could only be achieved by making others be responsible for your wholeness, your ease, your comfort, your abundance. And so naturally, everything that followed became transactional. It became your lifelong task to see to it that others made you comfortable, happy, successful, abundant, whole. Now, the simple fact is that only those others that you could reach in this way were those who likewise had decided to look at things in their own way. And so they made the same demands of you. And so everyone joined together in finding ways to hopefully bring about the greatest amount of equity without losing even more than you had lost by virtue of abandoning the Father. And that's why existence is a struggle. But I'm bringing this up because at the bottom line, what all of you are teaching, if you are not in a process of awakening, is transactional. Getting for getting, or getting for giving. I give you this, you give me that, and what you must give me must be equal to what I think I am losing if I give you something. Of course, fear does many things. It causes a sense of paranoia. It causes there to be lack of confidence, even though there might be justification for confidence. And so there is distrust. And as a result of distrust coupled with fear, one tends to, if he can get away with it, take advantage of his brother or sister and get more than the apparent cost of the loss of what is being extended to that brother or sister. And so everything becomes quite muddy. Mind you, this doesn't just apply to money. It applies to the sharing or extension of love, the sharing or extension of trust. It applies to human relationships. It truly finds its way into every corner of life experience. And this isn't right teaching. And the learning that occurs isn't right learning. The teaching and the learning accomplish one thing, the reinforcement of the human condition. The reinforcement of the empty experience of not being connected with one source, of not being fully consciously aware of what you truly are. It's the result of abandoning the place of excellence in you and then imagining that you haven't abandoned it. It's miserable. And what's the way out? The way out is to shift from getting to giving. And to give from that place of excellence in you that up to this point you have chosen to block out of your mind. Because, of course, you have more important things to do, like survive in this miserable experience and make something wonderful out of it all by yourself, which is impossible. Right learning is never a matter of finding a way to be alone, separate from your source, and experience fulfillment. It is not a matter of improving the human condition without ever discovering that what you're calling the human condition is the divine state of being, which you are blocking from your experience. Now, if fear and wrong teaching is coloring your every perception, and therefore causes misperception to creep into every corner of your life, then obviously, if the shift from getting to giving is going to occur, then the attitude of gifting is going to have to reach every single itty-bitty corner of your life. The willingness to extend love and consideration and genuine caring will have to extend to the smallest insect, the most poisonous insect, the most ferocious beast, the plants, the trees, the clod of dirt, the rock, your brother and your sister, and yourself. In other words, it's not complicated. You're either doing one of two things. You're either in a state of fear, engaged in getting, or you're in a state of peace, engaged in giving. Behaving in a way always that makes your brother whole, that makes your plants whole, that makes your world whole, that makes your business transactions identify your wholeness and the wholeness of another, without for a moment indulging in getting. Because you're willing to embrace as a fact the divine truth that wholeness is the nature of your being, because it's the Father's good pleasure to give you it all, the kingdom. That's your birthright. Because this is not your habit, it's something that you must use some self-discipline for. And you must practice it on purpose in order for it to be a conscious experience for you, which, as time goes, accumulates for you a background, a history, if you will, of conscious experience, of engaging in making your brother, your sister, and your world whole, until it becomes second nature to you. Because you see, as this habit begins to replace the old habit of getting, you begin to remember, ah, this is what's normal. This is my birthright. This is my being. This is what I'm all about. And when that light bulb goes on in your awareness, it stops becoming, it stops being a disciplined practice. And it just becomes you being yourself in an entirely new way from an entirely new place. But you won't get to that new place if you don't begin to consciously practice what to you at the moment seems to be unnatural, and to practice it with discipline, to practice it with commitment, and to be alert for the places where you are either bargaining for another to provide you with your wholeness, or you are dealing with another in a manner that gets more than it, the situation is worth, and leaves your brother at a disadvantage. It feels risky when you're coming from the place you're coming to not leverage your well-being from your brothers and sisters and your world. Oh, we need fossil fuel so that we can drive our cars, and so it justifies raping the land and being unwise in the use of its resources. And you create imbalance. You leave everything less than whole. You leave things depleted because there wasn't enough love to give the attention needed to see that your behavior didn't cost the earth or you or anyone else anything. Thus leaving everyone in a position to continue with ease to experience natural abundance. You see, fear is the lesson that you all need to stop teaching. And love is the lesson that you all need to start being. I didn't say loving, being loving is the lesson you need to start teaching, because being loving is a behavior. It is time for you to be love. And in order to be love, you have to turn your front toward the altar instead of your back. And you need to inquire from a source other than all of the mutually agreed upon definitions that you and everyone else have securely established. But remember this, to the degree that fear has been the reason for your actions, then your actions will confirm their source, which is fear. And I know in many ways all of you say, well, I'm not that uncomfortable. You know, things could be better, but I'm not so uncomfortable that I really think I need to be as radical as you're talking about and shift from securing my best interests from my brothers and my world and instead shift to extending my brothers and sisters and world's best interests to them and let that be first. Because that's the way I move out of fear. That's the way I re-access my experience of what I divinely am. And that's the way I wake up from the whole illusion of lack, tininess, of being solitary, isolated, and alone, and lonely, constantly trying to overcome that loneliness. You know, things aren't that bad for me to go to that extreme. The simple fact is, there is a different way to be than the way you are being. And I am here to talk with you about that different way of being. And not to confirm the way you have been being. And indeed, that is what the Course is here to illuminate as well. But the whole reason for illuminating it is so that you might come to a place where within yourself you decide to behave in a different way. Not think in a different way in the privateness of your mind, but to be in the world, and with your brothers and sisters in a new way that doesn't always secure your safety, but one which has as its motive to secure your brother's safety. Because whatever you do to your brother, you do to yourself. Whatever you extend to your brother, you are embraced by. Because you are what you be. And you can't be anything all by yourself. You've tried that. You've been there, done that, but you haven't stopped yet. See, I want you all to arrive at the point where you can say, ah, been there, done that. It's out of my life. I know I don't need to do that anymore. Okay. We'll go to the book. God is not the author of fear. You are. You have chosen, therefore, to create unlike him, and you have made fear for yourselves. You are not at peace because you are not fulfilling your function. That's all. You're at odds with yourself. It isn't that you're not at peace because you've been disobedient and there's threat of punishment. The moment you act at odds with yourself, you try to do the impossible, and it's uncomfortable, but it's not a punishment. As I've said before, it's just your innate, capital S, sanity, providing you with the experience that you're attempting to do the impossible, and there's no fulfillment in it. God gave you, continuing, God gave you a very lofty responsibility which you are not meeting. Well, don't let that overwhelm you. Your lofty responsibility is to be the presence of love, which you are. He didn't give you pissant little egos a lofty responsibility. He didn't give who you think you are a lofty responsibility. And don't worry, who you think you are is not going to have to fulfill that lofty responsibility because you haven't for a moment been who you think you are. Who you divinely are has a natural, spontaneous inclination and impulse to be the fullest that you can be from that place of excellence in you. And that's utterly natural. And yes, it can be called a lofty responsibility. God gave you a very lofty responsibility which you are not meeting. You know this, and you are afraid. In fact, your egos have chosen to be afraid instead of meeting it. See? Well, I'm not really that uncomfortable. I'm not so uncomfortable that I would choose to do this radical thing that you're talking about. See? Your egos have chosen to be afraid instead of meeting it. When you awaken, you will not be able to understand this because it is literally incredible. But another thing is that not only will you not be able to understand it, you won't give it a second thought because you will be so fully engaged in the joy of reflecting God and letting God be all there is of you so that every single act, every single intent you have is a universal blessing that illuminates universally. That's where you will be. That's what you will be experiencing. And you won't even be trying to understand how on earth it is you could have looked at things the way you did before. Do not believe the incredible now. Any attempt to increase its believableness is merely to postpone the inevitable. The word inevitable is fearful to the ego, but joyous to the soul. God is inevitable. And I'll say, the Son of God, knowing that he's the son or daughter of God, is inevitable. God is inevitable, and you cannot avoid him any more than he can avoid you. And this is me. You can only imagine that you can avoid God, or abandon God, or steal his authority away from him and express your own. The ego, continuing, the ego is afraid of the soul's joy, because once you have experienced it, you will withdraw all protection from the ego and become totally without the investment of fear. I want to tell you something. When you decide to shift from getting to giving to having your brother demonstrate your wholeness for you, to you, and it is your pleasure to make him whole, not because that's what he wants, but because there's nothing more satisfying to do, it will bring up your fear of being vulnerable, because you will be abandoning your practice of self-protection. But if you will persist in caring enough to see to it that you never leave your brother at a disadvantage, you will begin to experience peace, because the peace you're giving your brother by not demanding from him what he cannot truly give you is the peace you become enveloped by. Continuing, your investment in fear is great now, because fear is a witness to the separation, and your ego rejoices when you witness to it. Leave it behind. Do not listen to it, and do not preserve it. And this is where the self-discipline comes in. When the tendency is there to Jew your brother down on a deal, or to take advantage of him on a deal, or to just engage in the deal to preserve your wholeness, or to substantiate what you think you need to have in order to feel secure, sorry, I lost it. You will find yourself encircled by, embraced by, and imbued with the conscious experience of your invulnerability and your safety. Why? Because you gave it away to another. Continuing, listen only to God. And that can mean something as simple as listening for the impulse to be love. Listen to the impulse to come from the place of excellence in you. Listen, continuing, listen only to God, who is as incapable of deception as are the souls he created. All of you are actually incapable of deception. And the you that you think you are, that is capable of deception, is purely imaginary. And the brothers or sisters you see that you believe are capable of deception are purely imaginary. Because neither you nor they have the capacity to be independent of your source. And so you haven't accomplished it. And once you get this point, that none of you have accomplished being sinners, you will understand why all of you in an instant can be exonerated and healed of any of the effects of deception that you think you either brought on someone else or that someone else brought on you. You have got to be open to the experience of instantaneous correction of anything that you have seen that has been to your disadvantage or injury. Because if you don't believe that there can be instantaneous correction for no good reason, not because justice has been served, not because a penalty has been paid, but just because it isn't the truth of you or your brother. Until you see that, you will continue to justify extracting a tooth for a tooth and an eye for an eye. Get. Make your brother responsible for your wholeness. This is an axiom, and I'm continuing. Release yourselves and release others. If you release yourself, you release others. If you release others, truly, you release yourself. And until you release each other from your mutually agreed upon definitions and your mutual agreements, you will not remember your wholeness and reaccess your wholeness, and will unnecessarily remain bound in the dream. Again, continuing, release yourselves and release others. Do not present a false and unworthy picture of yourself to others, and do not accept such a picture of them yourselves. See, this is where a good teacher comes into play, because a good teacher is not only concerned with what he has to teach, but finds the student worthy and capable of embracing and embodying what's being taught. The ego has built a shabby and unsheltering home for you because it cannot build otherwise. And let's remember that what this really means is that the Christ that you are, the divine one that you are, who has chosen to express autonomy, has built a shabby and unsheltering home for yourself, because that's really the only thing you can do in a state of fear and in a sense of pissant tininess. So when it says the ego has built a shabby and unsheltering home for you, don't sit there self-righteously and say, yeah, my ego really doesn't like me. Yeah, my ego really is a bad guy. Well, that's a way of disowning your authority. You're doing it, and you're saying, I'm not doing it. And you convinced yourself, you're not doing it. And you ultimately succeed, or think that you succeed, in saying that you're not doing it by saying, I'm not the Christ. I'm not holy. I'm just a human being. I'm a human being with a brain in my head, with synapses and electrical currents, and what comes out of one's brain is an ego. All of the psychologists will tell me that. Oh, there are studies for years that tell me that I'm an ego. You know. So then, something comes along, like metaphysics or the Course, and it says that you are not your ego. Oh, that's even better. Now you can really be mad at your ego. Oh, my ego did this, my ego did that. Damn my ego. But you're still caught, because you still have neglected to own who you are. You still are reluctant to say, I am the Christ. And you're still reluctant to be out from that place of excellence in you, which is your Christhood, and you still insist on operating on a get-get basis. You still continue to operate as though it's your brother's responsibility to demonstrate your wholeness for you. And so now, you're even more confused than ever. And your ego infrastructures have gotten even more complex, because now there's you and your ego. But you know what? It isn't you, the Christ, yet. It isn't you, the one capable of utter, unsurpassable excellence. Oh yeah, well, things aren't that rough yet. I can exist a little bit longer without going that far, you see. And so your ego continues to build, or you continue as an unacknowledged Christ that has to be then an acknowledged ego, has built a shabby and unsheltering home for you because it cannot build otherwise, and things aren't tough enough yet for you to change. Dear. Do not try to make this impoverished house stand. Give it up. That isn't what it says here. Do not try to make this impoverished house stand. Its weakness is your strength. And that might be more clearly understood if we reverse it. Your strength, your divine strength, is its weakness. Only God could make a home that is worthy of His creations, who have chosen to leave it empty by their own dispossession. But the home is still there. The altar is still in the center of you. Your capacity to turn around toward that place of excellence, to learn of the Father what the truth is about everything, because your Father is you, your right mind. Only that. That is all it takes. And only that is what it takes to repossess your home. Continuing, yet His, God's, home will stand forever. Because it's, this is me, this, because it's your very being. Continuing, and is ready for you when you choose to enter it, which means when you are ready to readmit to yourself that you're the Christ. That you are a place of excellence, being excellent, because you have no other real capacity. Of this, continuing, of this you can be wholly certain. God is as incapable of creating the perishable as the ego is of making the eternal. That's how diametrically opposed things are. That's how black and white things are. And ultimately, the blackness and whiteness of it is that everything is either real or unreal. And there ain't no in between. Of your egos, you can do nothing to save yourselves or others. But of your souls, you can do everything for the salvation of both. Humility is a lesson for the ego, not for the soul. The soul is beyond humility because it recognizes its radiance. It doesn't block it. And gladly sheds its light everywhere. Now the soul doesn't prance around the universe saying, "Oh, glory, glory, I'm spreading my light everywhere and blessing everyone. Oh, glory, glory, isn't this a wonderful experience? Oh, bliss, 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 bliss." The soul is light. Illumination is spontaneous, inevitable. It doesn't spread its light for a purpose. To get. It doesn't be illumination for everyone's benefit. Or to make them happy so they'll be nice to the soul that's spreading the light. The soul is beyond humility because it recognizes its radiance. It recognizes itself in the radiance. And gladly sheds its light everywhere. A better way than saying gladly sheds its light everywhere is that it finds absolutely no justification for withholding it. in that sense, it gladly sheds its light. It doesn't even consider a possibility that there might be some corner of infinity of the universe that it might withhold its light, that it might withhold itself. The meek, continuing, the meek shall inherit the earth because their egos are humble. And this gives them better perception. Well, humility is embodied in the abandoning of the determination to say, Father, I would rather see things my way, and turning back toward the altar. And naturally, if you're turning back to where the truth lies to be seen, you're going to have better perception, aren't you? Because you're going to be seeing truth more clearly. You're going to be having the experience of what it is. And you're also going to be having the clearer, not understanding or knowledge of love, but the experience of being that point where love bubbles forth into expression again spontaneously and without a justification. When you're not looking at something, you can't see it. When you are looking at it, you can. And so the meek shall inherit the earth because their egos are humble, willing to look where they can see, and what? The inevitable happens. This gives them better perception. Simple, uncomplicated. The kingdom, continuing, the kingdom of heaven is the right of the soul, whose beauty and dignity are far beyond doubt, beyond perception, and stand forever as the mark of the love of God for his creations. In other words, that place of excellence in you is the mark of the love of God for you, for his creations, continuing, who are wholly worthy of him and only of him. Nothing else is sufficiently worthy to be a gift for a creation of God himself. So the gifts of fear that you're all giving each other out of habit and out of self-preservation is unworthy. It's an unworthy gift for a creation of God, meaning you and each other. Continuing, I will substitute for your ego. That is, if you want a substitute. Oh, I know. Things aren't tough enough yet. Things are going along fairly well. I know. I don't need you to substitute yet, but hey, Jesus, I'll call on you. I'm sure I'll call on you if the going gets really rough, but hey, right now, I don't want to rock the boat, okay? But I hear you. Again, I will substitute for your ego if you wish, but never for your soul. A father can safely leave a child with an elder brother who has shown himself responsible, but this involves no confusion about the child's origin, meaning the one left in the older brother's care. The brother, the older brother, can protect the child's body and his ego, which are very closely related, but he does not confuse himself with the father of the child because he does this. Although the child may, while he's in the older brother's care, look upon his older brother the same as he looks upon his father. I can be entrusted with your body and your ego simply because this enables you not to be concerned with them and lets me teach you their unimportance. That's why I'm here for you. That's why your guides are here for you. That's why the whole brotherhood that is awake is present for you on your behalf, so that you might set aside the habit of engaging the ego infrastructures, the mutually agreed upon definitions, and the fear that if you don't, you will die. So that you might be with me consciously and experience a stable and continuous relationship that at the least demonstrates to you experientially that you're safe no matter what your ego definitions are or what your ego fears are. I could not understand their importance to you if I had not once been tempted to believe in them myself. Well, you know what, it really is helpful if you believe that I really do exist and that I'm not just a figurehead of a major religion. And it really does help if, in addition to believing that I exist, you are willing to believe that I'm available to you directly in your mind, and that it's my desire to commune with you directly, to have a direct relationship with you, so that if you wish, you may shift your allegiance, ever increasingly, hopefully, from your ego to me, so that I might let you lean upon me, so that you might get the feel of the movement of being from a different vantage point than the one you've been engaged in, which has been one of fear and self-protection. Let us undertake to learn this lesson together, so we can be free of them together. I need devoted teachers who share my aim of healing the mind. I need devoted teachers. Teachers of right teaching and right learning. I need teachers who are going to teach by being love rather than teaching fear. Now, another way of saying it that will put it more clearly is that I need devoted beers. I need those who are willing to come from that place of excellence within themselves, in the beginning with me, so that you might get the feel for coming from that place of excellence in you. Because this allows you to be the presence of the love, of love, the embodiment of the Father's will, that constitutes the light that illumines every little itty-bitty corner of life. I need teachers of truth rather than teachers of illusion. But I don't need a concept of teachers. I don't need someone being a teacher. The word teacher is not the designator of a position. Truly, a teacher is one who is simply being with excellence as a brother to his brothers and sisters, as a sister to her brothers and sisters. As that which is inseparable from the earth, the plants, the birds, the universe, as something that has as its conscious intent the desire to make and keep everything in his experience whole, because everything in his experience is worthy of it. A teacher is one who is willing to extend love, truth, rather than fear and illusion. I need you to be who you really are. Why? Because that's the way you wake up. And when you wake up, the brotherhood is more consciously whole. Because there isn't some part of the brotherhood having committed themselves to fitful dreams, and who are therefore not present with us, not joying their birthright, and in effect disallowing us from experiencing them as part of the wholeness of us as a conscious experience. Don't get hung up on the word teachers. I need devoted beers of love who share my aim of healing the mind. The soul, meaning your soul, is far beyond the need of your protection or mind. Remember this. In this world, you need not have tribulation because I have overcome the world. That is why you should be of good cheer. You know what? All of you are pretty confident that it's impossible to levitate. Somebody says, levitate. You say, I can't levitate. I can't levitate. Levitation is impossible. I've heard it, but you know how rumors are and stories go, you know. I don't believe it's possible. I can't do it. But the moment someone of your friends does it, you're going to say, well, if he can do it, I can do it. Because he's not someone special. As soon as someone does the impossible, you know it's possible for you, and you will embrace the possibility, and you will accomplish the possibility. So, it is helpful for you to know that I have stood exactly where you are, with the same temptations to be teachers of fear, and to be in the get-get position, and to make others demonstrate my wholeness to me, and make sure that I'm not shortchanged, and that equity prevails. I've been there. That whole perspective, I moved out of. Now, if you dare for a moment to think that I exist, that I really exist, and that I'm available to you, and then you acknowledge or are willing to believe that I've been exactly where you are, and know exactly how you're feeling, and that I'm no longer in that place, then you have a justification for saying, well, if he did it, I can do it. Not only that, he did it, and he says that it's now his function to stand with me as I do that and help me. And again, the last sentence in this section. That is why you should be of good cheer. And you want to know something? I'm not the only one standing with you in this way. And let me leave you with these words. Don't wait until it really gets tough before you say, hey, I'm willing to take a look at this radical way of being that Raj is talking about. Do it while you're not under stress. And then, don't believe yourself when you say, it's not really that bad yet. Don't believe yourself when you say that. Because it can be a heaven of a lot better. I love you. Talk to me this week. Talk to me tonight. Don't call Paul on the phone to talk to me. Sit down and shut up. and say, Raj, and wait for me to respond. Feel for my response. And keep persisting. Because it's inevitable that we will connect. It's unavoidable. Because I love you. Because I am love. And because my only function is to extend it, to embrace you in it. And to illuminate the experience of it in you. So that it's not just a nice thought. And if I love you this way, God loves you this way. Because I am expressing the Father. I'm not great little Jesus prancing around outside his Father's house saying, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Oh, it's my purpose to love you and love you and love you. No. I am love. And I'm not outside my Father's house. And the love with which I love you is the love the Father is embracing and embodying, embracing you with and embodying as you. And I am conveying to you that fact so that you might dare to abandon your commitment to fear and self-defense that keeps you locked in the dream. Again, I love you, and I look forward to being with you next week.